Hey, welcome back. This is Newsfile. It's your most authoritative news analysis platform. And here on Newsfile, we put Ghana first. And my guests who have been helping us do this discussion of our 30th anniversary of the Constitution's referendum that adopted it, and whether or not it's been good or not, and is threatened, and whether we should have DC elections on partisan basis, have been Suleiman Abrahima, Executive Director, Media Foundation for West Africa. Mercy Labi is Deputy Commissioner, Shraj. Mary Awalana Ada is Programs Manager, the Ghana Integrity Initiative. Dr. John Osai Kwapong is Political Scientist, Democracy and Development Fellow at the CDD, and Professor Kwesi Enin, Director, Faculty of Academic Affairs and Research, Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center. Now, let's get to what the U.S. State Department report on human rights for 2021 has been saying. But this show is brought to you by Bank of Africa, strong as a group, close as a partner. MTN, everywhere you go, Ashasi University, educating ethical and entrepreneurial leaders for Africa, Robert and Sons, Optical Services, your comprehensive eye care service provider for 31 years, Waylead Properties, home is where one starts, Duroplus, where Duroplus goes, water flows, and Trasarco Fast Floor, stronger, faster, and affordable. Now, Dr. John Osai Kwapong had some comments earlier about the State Department report, and then Professor Kwejo Apiejetia of the University of Ghana School of Law also had some comments. Let's listen to those before we engage our guest.
It's a fair reflection of where we are as a country, and it also reflects what, as my panel just said, a validation of what has been reported in the media and the work that NGOs and other non-governmental bodies have done in terms of bringing out the issues to the fore and letting people know about what is going on in the country.
Right.
However, with regard to the point about it being a reflection of our democracy, I think that we need to look at it more carefully in the context of not interpreting that to mean that this is how best we can go,
right?
Because we can do better than where we are, and so it's a call for sober reflection, admission of what has not gone well, and to say that we will certainly improve in the next report.
All right. Before I get to the guests, let me share your views that you have sent in on the first issue that we have discussed. Dean Perero says that, take the e-levy brouhaha for example, majority of Ghanaians are against it, yet everything was done to have it passed. This can't be democracy. Mark Aji says, listening to the president carefully, one could guess that he has no genuine intention to strengthen democracy at the grassroots, but to strengthen his party. I Tarzan, that's Dr. Charles Rekobrobe, says, Newsfile, marking the 30th anniversary of the referendum is not celebrating constitutional rule, which will be on January 7, 2023. Yes, I did note that, except that I didn't mention the specific date of January 7. 2023. The referendum forced us to endorse a constitutional dictatorship, which has become an albatross to meaningful republican democracy. So that is Dr. Charles Rekobrobe's verdict. This one, Ejay Bequeen says that the president was spot on when he indicated that democracy has been good and that people seeking to use the back door do so for their parochial interest. But is it also not parochial to suggest that it is either a partisan MMDCE election or no election at all? Henry Tebby says, corruption is increasing day in and out in Ghana because our leaders, preach virtues in opposition and practice vice when they get into office. Until our leaders see themselves as party, as part of the problems and bring us together, we should forget about developing Ghana. In fact, somebody suggests that we should not be surprised that when, if MPP gets into opposition, they will say that they do not support partisan election for MMDCEs. Anything is possible with our political groupings, you know. That's why I said they don't really have ideologies that they stand by. Our democratic laws generally might have served its purpose in the early days of implementation. At the moment, I believe they have outlived their functions and therefore need a review to serve the generation now and the future. This is MG Bevodi. Okay, a final one from Say Hamid. Ghana's democracy has been a sham. Injustice supervised by courts of justice, political leaders with no respect for constitutional accountability, and a hopeless and hapless citizens who are so deeply attached to tribe and party and ignorant of their basic rights. That's really harsh. Okay, so let's begin with Mary. The report by the State Department, that's the US State Department report on human rights, mentions a number of things that clearly is giving Ghana such a bad name out there. What's your assessment of the report?
Thank you very much, Samson. I believe the report is very exhaustive. It's a reflection of the work that has been done over time by civil society, think tanks, academia, and the rest. However, let me quickly say that reading the report on some of the human rights and the language used, I began to have a feeling that is this Ghana they are referring to?
You're
in
right.
Some of the instances with
You're
the
right.
language, I was really, really, it was sad that this is our Ghana that is being spoken to. I believe some years past, perhaps this would have been South Sudan or the other areas where we know human rights violations are rampant. Unfortunately, this is what it says.
Mm.
However, let me be quick to say that
the portions that you are referring to, will that include unlawful or politically motivated killings? Where it says unlawful or politically motivated killing, it talks about
exactly.
There were a few reports that government or its agents committed arbitrary or unlawful killings. Officers charged with investigating security force killings include the Special Investigations Branch of the Ghana Armed Forces and the Police Professional Standards Bureau. On June 26, unidentified perpetrators beat hashtag fix the country movement supporter and social activist Ibrahim Kaka Muhammad in Ejira, Ashanti region. On June 28, he died in the hospital from his injuries. Muhammad, who was also a member of the Economic Fighters League, was a vocal anti-corruption activist and Fix the Country had protested against restrictions on freedom of assembly. The Economic Fighters League reported that Muhammad had received threats due to his activism and police had warned him prior to his beating and death against disturbing the peace. An investigation into Muhammad's death continued. On June 29, during protests in the wake of his death, security forces shot and killed two persons. During the 2020 election period, authorities, media, and observers reported as many as 8 killings, with at least 2 killed by the National Election Security Task Force, composed of military and police units, and at least 2 deaths from civilian violence. Investigations continued into these deaths. This is what makes you ask yourself, are they talking about Ghana?
Oh, yes. You know some of these things. You heard about them, you saw them on TV, but the language with which it is presented, then it brings it home to you that we are really getting out of hand when it comes to these brutalities by the security forces. I read other portions where it talks about the situation in our prisons. I've seen a video documentary by one of your own, but then the language with which it is spoken to, and this is going out there for everybody in the world to read. This is our own Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah's Ghana, that we tout ourselves for democratic credentials. We abide by freedom of speech and then liberties for our people. It is seriously disturbing and somehow disgusting that this is us. But let me quickly add that even though all these reflect our situation, we would have appreciated some evidence to, if it is a survey, the report, it talks about the timing. Timing is 2021, that's what it says. But then reflecting on the report or going through it, you realize that we have some periods within 2018, others 2020 being spoken to in there. So some clarification on the scope of the methodology would have been good for all of us to appreciate and comprehend. I am saying this also because we do not want people to then pick these aspects of the gaps in there to speak to and leave out the advocacy issues we should be speaking to bring change. I really, really, really feel that if this is a report, it shouldn't be for Ghana. Mm. The Ghana we all aspire and we want to see is not this one that is presented in this report. So perhaps for future reports, they should consider this and then consider firming up some of the issues they talk to, like you have read out. There are some which are generic statements. And when I talk about the issues of years, you realize that they talk about, when it comes to corruption, they talk about the Auditor General's report of 2018. Meanwhile, the report is speaking to 2021. So where are we in the issues of scope, in the issues of the sample being selected for the human rights report?
Okay. Professor Amin, some have said it does look exaggerated because they are surprised that these are issues that we have lived them, we have seen them, we have witnessed them. I don't remember any issue they have that we have not reported about. Is it the case that they exaggerating somewhat, or that we have been playing the ostrich and we have been hypocritical in not calling a spade a spade? They mention, like, the journalist Caleb Kuda, they mention, for example, the MP who threatened and asked people that, you know, threatened, called for Erastus Asare-Dokou to be beating up. Who has a history of disclosing the identity of a journalist who was murdered and nothing has happened to him so far. The manner in which they do it, is it just difference or that they are exaggerating?
When this report was published, my phone never stopped ringing. And I've responded to it in two ways. And I think your question tangentially answers part of my responses. First, every single incident in that report are things that Ghanaian activists have raised concerns about. They've spoken about it, written about it, in some instances, demonstrated. certainly on your program, if the report, if it's a 2021 report that comes out in 2022, then latter part of 2020 might be captured and all of that. But everything in there we'll discuss. As to whether there's been a response and the quality of that response from those institutions or groups that we have, you know, critiqued and engaged, is out there. My second concern was the excessive and almost, what is the word I am looking for? Indecent joy that, yes, we have said it. Even the Americans have reported, or they are reporting. And my question was, and so what? Every single reference, and I'm happy my colleague panelists mentioned the lack of supporting evidence. Now, our own Kweku Baku has said, these are repetitions. In my line of work, this is self-plagiarism. It is disgraceful, it is an insult, and does not reflect the reality of the work in progress that Ghana is making. Unfortunately, it is becoming a political football. So someone perceives me as pro-NPP and then just says, well, if you don't like it, why don't you go and look for money and do your own report about the United States? That is not the issue. The issue is that as patriotic Ghanaians, we are bold enough to accept when we are wrong and when our institutions are not working optimally, as we've been talking about the whole morning. But we must also be bold enough when our partners write something that is palpably false to point it out to them and to critique them. Mm. And I want to give one or two examples.
That would be great. That would be great.
Of how we have failed in our statecraft in responding to the United States. One, something is about 2 months ago when there was a travel advisory that people traveling in the north should be careful or that there could be an attack. But the U.S. Embassy in Accra also stated that advisory was based on unsubstantiated reports. Now, that undermines or that causes reputational damage to the Republic of Ghana. Granted that there have been attacks around our neighbors, but there must have been some intelligence upon which that report was written. As I speak to you, I don't know whether the Defense Ministry or the Foreign Ministry have rebutted this. So it is out there in the open. The second relates in this report to the very broad statement about the judiciary. Two quick points there. ANAS has done work on the judiciary several years ago.
2015.
Certain decisions have been taken. Mr. Kandapa, 2 weeks ago, made a statement about the judiciary. It is important, and this morning, we have celebrated Professor
Gajipo.
We need to celebrate ourselves, and particularly those who consistently are on the front line raising their voices and pointing out our weaknesses and the gaps for rectification. How would the Ghana government respond to this report?
Right, so Prof, hold on, I'll return to you on that because I'd like us to conclude with how the government should be responding if necessary. Now, Suleimana, the Prof raises issues about he's concerned, just like many Ghanaians, even though they have seen some of these things, the manner in which they are described, you know, in the report, sometimes you look at it yourself, you ask, really, is this happening in Ghana? But you see, I don't know, is it just a difference in our cultural orientation and in our use of the English language? and that we, like I said, I asked earlier whether we play ostrich and we are a bit, you know, hypocritical about it or what. I have been on a board of lawyers. It's an international group out of the country. And we were debating one issue. One individual who is a state appointee of the state had done something, and we needed to issue a statement. When the draft statement was done, the action, which was unconstitutional and criminal, was attributed to the state as state-sponsored. My Ghanaian approach was that that is inaccurate. That's just one individual within somewhere. It cannot be done so. Mm-hmm. I was overvoted and overruled, ignored, like I didn't even exist. Is that what you see? David Tamaklou, for example, what's up online? Mm-hmm. He was arrested, dealt with in a manner that we have heard, only for us to discover later that it was someone's personal, you know, fight that they got, you know, security to deal with him on. So what have they said wrong in the report?
Well, Samson, first of all, I would want to say that from what I've read in the report, in terms of the facts, the incidents that they've related to, these are matters of facts. And so there is nothing to begrudge the report on in terms of whether or not what they have stated accurately reflects what is happening on the ground. I've heard people raise concerns about the choice of language. And as you have rightly indicated, when it comes to international human rights issues, when we talk about the state, it's not as though we are referencing the president or the ministers and so on and so forth. We are talking about state actors, the police, the military, the intelligence agencies, and so on and so forth. And so when you look at the report and it states that there are reports that the government or government actors, you know, perpetrated certain crimes, of course, if it is the police, if it is the military, if it is the National Security Bureau, these are institutions of state. And therefore, whatever actions they take, if it's good, it reflects on the state. If it is bad, it reflects on the state. The other point that I would want to say is that if you read the UN Human Rights Council reports, you would find that in terms of international human rights reporting, there are particular expressions that are used. And these are almost like codified language in terms of international human rights reporting. So, for example, when we do country reports on the universal peer review mechanism, which is something that you know, countries are obliged to commit to and then periodically submit reports on what has been done. If you submit an NGO report, for example, in terms of editing, they will tell you, no, this cannot pass. You know, this cannot pass, not because the word you have used does not have the meaning that they want to ascribe to it, but there is international language for human rights reporting. And therefore, in terms of what people see and say, well, you see it and you get scared and so on and so forth. For me, what is important is, does it accurately reflect what happens on the ground? And I would say yes. Now, the other point is why the report is of value. Samson, if you have been following our work, in the last 2-3 weeks, the government of Guinea-Bissau shut down some 79 radio stations on the basis of defaulting in the payment of their what happened in Ghana authorization fees. And we needed to engage with the government. One of the things we did was to mobilize our partners across the region to get them signed on a petition to demand that the government should listen. And when that petition went, subsequently, my colleagues on the ground in Guinea-Bissau, together with our partners on the ground, mobilized and engaged with the government. Sometimes you need these international voices to be able to make the impact. And that is why sometimes we sit here as Media Foundation for West Africa, and yet we sign on documents to advocate on press freedom issues in Afghanistan. Because the global mobilization of voices then brings a certain perspective to the government that, look, it is not just people here who are listening or who are watching. The world is watching us, and we must listen to that. So for me, it's a report of value. The last time I was on a network with Professor Enin, I think his point was that he doesn't see any value in the report. And the point I made was, look, we are discussing these matters because it has been captured in a U.S. report. We had reported the incidents, all the incidents that had happened on press freedom, the attacks by national security, attacks by police, you know, the closure of radio stations, the politically motivated closure of radio stations, the president's own, you know, statements about whether Swale's murder should be considered an act of press freedom violation or not, the impunity over these crimes, the Kennedy-Japon incidents. We have reported on all these. You know, but it takes a U.S. report to come in, and then we revisit the conversation and giving it some national, you know, appeal and national importance. And so for me, when it comes to human rights, of course, earlier we talked about our democracy. We cannot have democracy without, you know, Basule, emphasis on human rights.
Are you not concerned that this report, as when you go to their page and you go to look for it, it is country, they do various countries. Yes. So this is the image that has been given to our country, to the globe, through this report, which is supposed to be accessed by anybody in the world. Mm-hmm. How does it feel?
No, for me, like I said, if it was a report that doesn't really cover the events that happen on the ground. And sometimes there are reports that you read from some of these international big countries, and you're like, okay, they already have something against China or Russia or Iran, and therefore it may not be surprising that you find this all there. But I'm saying that whether it's the press freedom issues, for example, you see internet censorship, and they say there were no evidence of restrictions on the internet. And then you read it and they say, well, the government takes the decisions of the court quite seriously. So there are positive elements in there. Mm. You would read in some countries where they will tell you, look, the government arbitrarily shut down the internet occasionally. There were restrictions. Government spied on, you know, people using mobile phones, mm, and so on and so forth. So there are positive elements. Mm. For me, what is important is these matters that have been captured, did they happen? The murder of Kaka, it happened. The attacks on journalists, it happened. The prison conditions, and you have been having a campaign on the horrible prison conditions. These are matters that exist. Mm. We need to acknowledge these issues and see how we work on them.
While we may not, you know, begrudge them for use of words like arbitrary arrest of LGBT, you know, people, there were 21 people who were arrested in Ho. Is it not the way we look at it and how differently they see some of these things? You arrest them that they have committed some, you know, unlawful assembly, you know, offense. Mm-hmm. Then prosecute them. You detain them. You don't grant them bail until, you know, so much has gone in. Then you release them. So when they look at it from that perspective, that is not prosecuting people for doing some wrong. Mm-hmm. Whilst I'm saying we may be able to live with that, is it not the case that, for example, when they say that, you know, under the freedom of peaceful assembly, that's page 11 to 12, that authorities launched an investigation into the killing of the two protesters, we're talking about the Kaka issue, but did not release any results. Additionally, following a directive by the president, Akufo-Addo, the Ministry of Interior established a 3-member committee to conduct a public inquiry into the killing of Mohammed and two protesters. Authorities did not release the results of the inquiry. This is not accurate.
Well, I mean, if that's what they say,
and even the inquiry was not the killing, that is being
pursued by a court.
Yes. But of course, you see, this is a human rights report, and their attention is on the human rights violation, which is the killing. And I'm saying that, of course, if they did indicate that there was no, you know, the report was not made available, that wouldn't be factual. Now, there's a difference between making the report available and then producing results. You know, in terms of producing results, we are looking at if people were found culpable, what has happened to those people? Has there been an action against those people? Have they been arrested? Have they been prosecuted? And what has happened in terms of the prosecution and so on and so forth? But for me, having read the report, I would say that to a large extent, 90%, 95% is about things that have happened. And it is not just only on Ghana. I took the pains to read about Senegal and Cape Verde. And I realized that, and I took these two countries because when it comes to freedoms in our region, these are countries that also do so well. Cape Verde is always ahead of us in terms of press freedom ranking and all of that. But you notice that they are particular about the incidents that may have happened that we would overlook. Sometimes we say, oh, well, it's normal. You know, if these things happen, it's normal. But it's important that we pay attention to these developments. And as we build our democracy, try to see how do we deal with these things. Yes, crime would always be committed, violations would always happen, but how does the state respond to these incidents? For me, that is what is very critical.
Okay, interesting, but you would also acknowledge that these reports, sometimes they reach out, is it sometimes or always, they reach out to the Ghanaian people and solicit their views in a certain way. Sometimes when you receive these things and you are fielding, answering them, you can't manufacture the facts.
Yes.
So, anyway, let me go to Dr. Osain Kwapong. And Doc, you know, when the manner in which, for example, they look at, let me not box you into that. Let's hear what your view is about the report, more particularly because you do some of these things yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. So I share Mr. Brimer's sentiments about the report. As I said this week, when I read the report and how they approached the report, I said to myself, well, most of the incidents that they document in the report are things that are NGOs, are civil society organizations, our media has reported on. And so none of those issues were necessarily new to me because they've been in the public space, they've been reported on, the prison conditions, et cetera, yes, I think with these types of human rights reports, my inclination is that they look at what the ideal state of a given human rights situation should be, and then they look at the deviations that occur. And as Mr. Brimer said, even if it's an individual trying to resolve a personal grievance with somebody, but uses state apparatus and state resources to do that, then it becomes a blot on the state. And so the question then becomes, are these incidents that are being done, that are being captured in this human rights report, a good or a poor reflection on the state? I know that usually when an external entity passes some of these judgments on your country, right, because of the feelings and attachments that you have for your country, there's that initial, this is strong, should you be saying this, should you not be saying this, there's that temptation to get a little bit defensive. If there are inaccuracies, sure, we must address that. But overall, I think the report captured things that we all know have happened, it has been reported on. And for me, the question that it raises for us then is, what does this mean for the state actors, and how the powers of the state are exercised vis-a-vis other actors within our political space in the country.
Mm. Okay, let me have Mercy Labi. Mercy, because of where you sit, the Ombudsman and Human Rights Commission, I suppose you may have read it with a setting eye that we will not be able to. What do you say?
Thank you, Samson. When you come to human rights, the state is the duty bearer. And we, the citizens, are the right holders. The state can commit human rights violations by itself through its agencies and other things. That is, it can be direct or indirect. The indirect one is where the state sits aloof and doesn't do anything when these violations are being occurred or practiced. I have read through the report and I will not look at the credibility or whatever of the report, but I have two main concerns. My one concern is the way the report generalizes issues and making some of our institutions look like they are useless. That's one concern. For example, the judiciary, saying that the judiciary was subject to unlawful influence and corruption, judicial officials reportedly have kept bribes. It's like the whole judicial system is corrupt. And we have a lot of integrity people in the judiciary. We may have one or two issues, but we should not generalize it. If you don't take care, citizens may lose interest, may lose confidence in this judiciary, and may take the law into their own hands. If we don't take care, citizens may lose interest in the police and may take the law into their own hands. I quite remember some time ago, we were having this mob action all over because we don't trust the police, we don't trust the judiciary and other things. We are not sending a good signal there. That is my concern. We may have one or two issues there, but we should not generalize it. The institutions are our inheritance or property. Because if I have a problem, if I have a human rights issue and I don't have a place to run to, then it becomes a problem. So please, my concern is, we should not generalize the issue that the whole judiciary is corrupt.
They begin the question on the rule of law by saying judicial independence is constitutionally and legally enshrined. While the judiciary has demonstrated greater levels of impartiality in recent years, corruption and bribery continue to pose challenges. This is not a fair statement.
It's fair.
I don't know if it's your microphone or something. We can't hear you as clearly as you were earlier.
Okay.
Yes,
is it clear now?
Great. Perfect.
Good. Thank you. As I said, that was the initial opening. But when you go to the denial of fair...
It's getting bad again.
Hello?
Yes, perfect. I think when you move away from the microphone, that's what we get there. Yeah.
Okay. As I was saying, my concern was when you go to the session where they were talking about fair trial, they have put everything together and generalized it. That is my problem. Yes, the judiciary, the other institutions.
Are you talking, for example, are you looking at something like this, says that constitutional protections for due process and defendants' rights are mostly upheld. However, police have been known to accept bribes. We say this at home all the time. Why are we angry that they are saying it? Make arbitrary arrests and hold people without charge for longer than the legally mandated limit of 48 hours. Is this not an open secret? Is it not a fact? The government is not obliged to provide the accused with legal counsel, and many people unable to afford lawyers are forced to represent themselves in court. This happens every day. I go to court, I see that in the lower courts. What's wrong with this?
Yes, Samson, it's happening. But as I said, we have institutions. It's a country, and there is no way we may have a whole year that there will not be any violations of our rights. But when the violations come, how we resolve it, it's what we have to look at. The institutions are there to help us to resolve, to get remedies and other things when these violations are practiced. When we continue to talk about our institutions that holds this or that give us these remedies, when we continue to talk about them in this way, I don't think it's the best. Yes, there are issues. I'm not saying that there are no issues. What they are saying is not there. Yes, some policemen take bribe. We all see there has been a lot of Afrobarometer reports and other things about them. And we all know. We see them on the road. But I always say that there is some good ones among them. We should not generalize it to demoralize their spirit. That's my one concern.
Okay. Dr. Osai Kwapong, do you appreciate what Mercy Labi is talking about? They say prisons are overcrowded and conditions can be life-threatening. I don't know how else you want them to say this. Though the prison service has attempted to reduce congestion and improve the treatment of inmates in recent years.
Right. And I think one of the concerns, though, that she's raising, which is what does some of these things do for these institutions that are charged to ensure that what I call institutions that make democracy work, right? And the question of what does these things do to change citizens' perceptions and views of these institutions and the trust and faith and confidence they place in these institutions. Samson, even if you close your eyes to the State Department report, right, the question of trust in institutions, as I've regularly pointed out in conversations with others, if you look at Afrobarometer, it's generally very low. Trust in the courts, trust in the Electoral Commission. I mean, we generally don't have a very strong culture of trust in our democratic institutions. Again, if you look at the Afrobarometer on perceptions of corruption in these institutions, they are also not generally very, very positive. Mm. So Mercy is right that these things have a way of shaping how citizens feel about these critical institutions. But even before the State Department report, there has been very strong signals from surveys like the Afrobarometer already indicating that there are issues of trust in our institutions. I worry particularly about the portion of that dealt with the judiciary, mm-hmm. because these are designed to be your fair and impartial arbiters, right, in our democratic spaces. And so if citizens begin to lose faith, trust in a critical institution like the judiciary, that becomes worrying.
Right.
And so for me, the concern is,
yes. So
what do we do about it?
So tell me, how will you state this? How will you restate it? Like you did for the president's statement, you restated it perfectly to some of us. Now, they said, the question is there an independent judiciary? That's the question. And this is how they make the statement. Judicial independence is constitutionally and legally enshrined. While the judiciary has demonstrated greater levels of impartiality in recent years, corruption and bribery continues to pose challenges. How else should they put this?
I don't see how else they can put it. Maybe they can, I mean, I don't know how else you can put some of these things to make it, quote unquote, more palatable to the reader. Because again, these are issues that long before the State Department report came out, that we've been having conversations about in the public space. Media has been talking about it, CSOs have been talking about it. So I'm not sure how you rephrase it beyond the way it's already been stated. Maybe you can simply just say, whilst the judiciary is independent and has been striving to maintain its independence, it continues to face certain challenges. Mm. Maybe if we drop those two words, maybe it might sound a little more palatable to the ears of the Ghanaian.
Okay. Professor Enin, is that really not our problem, rather than the factual... rather than the factual nature of these statements? Was that Mercy? Please, let's hear you quickly.
That's Mary. Just wanted to say that. It's Mary.
Yes. Go ahead.
Add that even though it's stated as much, it also brings in the good picture of some of the things the judiciary is also doing to try to promote its image and show some level of credibility within the institution. So you realize that in the report, it also mentions some mechanisms put in place, like the judicial complaints units, where people who have issues against judges and staff of the judicial service could go to complain with the assurance that some level of resolution will be brought to their complaint. So be it violations of their rights, be it staff who are demanding bribes from them. We in the Ghana Integrity Initiative have been working with this unit over time, and we have sent some complaints there which have been resolved. And so the report does not only talk about some of the perceptions of the citizens when it comes to corruption or bribery in the judicial sector. It also tries as much as possible to bring in some of the tools that are being put in place, like the case tracking mechanism,
right,
and also the judicial complaints unit, which is headed by an appeals court judge who report directly to the Chief Justice. Mm-hmm. So in that case, there is a mechanism put in place for some level of redress if there is a need for same by citizens.
Okay.
And I think in that regard, there have been
So let's hear from Professor Enin, and then I'll come to Sulemana in the studio. And forgive me to read this again. Despite here they are talking about, do laws, policies, and practices guarantee equal treatment of various segments of the population? So this is the methodology. This is how they go about it. Some of us have received these questions over the years, and you have to answer and complete it. They say, despite equal rights under the law, women face societal discrimination. Fact, if it's especially in rural areas where their opportunities for education and employment are limited. However, women's enrollment in universities is increasing. Well, in fact, there are some departments where I think the men are becoming afraid because the women are getting up to about 70% in one department. People with disabilities face societal discrimination. Fact, we passed a Disability Act. It says give them access to buildings, even in, you know, government buildings. Not all of them are compliant. I don't know. They talk about the LGBTQ thing. People have faced significant discrimination, and a bill that will limit LGBT rights was also considered by Parliament in 2021. They talk about the first reading that has happened and so on, and the fact that there was a violent raiding of a particular office, you know, the center was raided by security officers in February and was closed by police later that month. In May, police arrested 21 people participating in a legal training workshop operated by Ratify Ghana, alleging that they sought to promote homosexuality. The participants who were charged with unlawful assembly were bailed in June. That's how long it took for them to get bail until the case was dropped. Yes, Professor Eni.
Yes. Thank you very much. everything that you've mentioned is correct. I mean, they are factually correct. I mean, and I will repeat, and I think, Mr. Brahma, I agree with your point. My concern is that we should highlight our domestic interventions and efforts at all, you know, levels. We don't need somebody to come and to tell us before we believe that we are doing, you know, what is right. On the women thing, it's not only about rural women who are facing this today. If you look at the abuses that Nana Jane Okokwajiman faced as Mr. Mohammed Ranmi, it was disgraceful, it was unacceptable, and among the few people who spoke up was Ms. Esleusu Ekufu. And I want to salute her for that bravery in standing up, even for her political opponent. So there's a lot of work there.
Yeah, but she has equally been accused, even though at this time she gave a posture that many applauded. She had equally been accused of supporting, you know, unfounded allegations of people getting positions, women getting positions by sexual favors. Charlotte say all of those comments were out there the public.
Sure. So, I mean, it's a dicey, not a dicey issue, but I mean, people behave in different ways. But my argument is that it is not only women in the rural area, you know, who are discriminated or who are facing challenges. On the education bit, yes. I mean, look, women have had education in this country probably for more than a century, but it was small, and I'm happy based on your point that, you know, in some departments, you know, women are much more than men. In my own department at the Kofi Annan Center, I think women are almost about 65, you know, percent of my team. On disability, we haven't done well. I mean, my own mother is a polio victim, and the state's response in creating equal opportunities for people with disability, you know, leaves a lot. LGBTQ, big hypocrisy, because we know that homosexuality and lesbianism in our boarding school is rampant. Okay, when I went to boarding school, probably close to 50 years ago, what in infantry school we call Lotus was very rampant. Okay, and you know, in mixed schools, in girls' schools, boys' schools, it is this hypocrisy and our unwillingness to accept what sometimes it's uncomfortable. And I think the behavior of some of our leaders in seeking to criminalize, intimidate, and in some cases become violent was most disgraceful and unacceptable. All these are work in progress. We will get there, but it's going to take time. And I think we need an open, dialogic conversation that at least as a basis shows a tolerance and a willingness to listen to the other side. But it's going to be a long...
Yes. Now to what you wanted to say earlier, or advice, so to speak, as to how government should be reacting to this, if it should at all.
No, I don't think government is going to react in totality to the report, because government knows where it's located right now. Look, this report is from 2021. In 2022, the geopolitics of the world have shifted and shifted dramatically. So yes, this report is critical, it's quite unkind to the government, but we are on the council now, the Security Council. Our vote is needed, okay? The couple of votes in the Security Council in New York, we voted with the majority to critique the Russians. Subsequent to the motion to kick Russia out of the Human Rights Council in Geneva, we didn't support that vote. Okay, so government itself realizes that it has a little leverage now. You know, things have changed, and we need, or the U.S. and its allies would need the support necessary to continue to critique, you know, the Russians for what they are doing. You know, so I think government is going to keep quiet. There may be some backdoor channel conversation. But the relationship between the two countries is going to continue to be strong. The partnership will continue to grow. And I think they would need in the next year or two for us to continue to vote to at least support some of the motions coming from the United States.
You are saying, earlier, I got the impression that you were saying this is the government should be responding in a certain fashion. You are saying that's not necessary anymore?
No, I'm not saying it is not necessary. I'm saying government will not respond because the geopolitics have changed.
Okay.
And
okay.
From Accra,
right.
The assessment from being only an observer is that government is in a fairly strong position because its vote on the Security Council is needed to continue.
Okay. So whilst we are asking, you know, others who like to state things in certain blunt fashion that we are unhappy with, shouldn't we be talking to ourselves? The NPP presently is doing its internal elections. Look at what is happening. People imposters, people wearing uniforms and claiming to be security, they are not. You know, should this lead to bloodshed, rule of law? Some have successfully secured injunctions. They are not being respected, and I know how they do it. They will not respect them. Later, nothing will happen because the people are family, so they will go and talk and everything will... I'm just seeing one this morning, is it at Blikma West? They have put an injunction on the elections there, which is supposed to be, is it tomorrow or so? But check, it might happen. So what are we saying? These things happen and they impinge on these reports.
Yeah, I think earlier we were talking about our democracy, and of course democracy should be about rule of law. But when increasingly it becomes rule of man or rule of strength, then we begin to see some of these developments that we are witnessing. Increasingly, what we call democracy is becoming just an affair between the MPP and the NDC. And because politics has become one of the easiest routes towards becoming wealthy, people are prepared to do anything. Earlier, I made the point that, look, you just need an appointment by the president. Mm. And that takes you to a different class in terms of economics, in terms of wealth. There are people who perhaps were earning less than 2,000, and by mere appointment of the president, or by the appointment of the president, they are now earning, let's say, 20 to 30 times what they were earning before. And so for such people, you can trust that they will do anything possible to ensure that they get to the positions that they have to have. And what is happening on the ground now will determine who becomes general secretary, who becomes chairman, who becomes whatever. And of course, there are already entrenched interests in those positions. Somebody somewhere wants somebody to be the chairman, the secretary, and all of that. And then beyond that, it would also ultimately determine who becomes the flag bearer of the political party. And so it's a business thing that is happening.
Well, the potential flag bearers were paying for the nomination forms.
Exactly, you know. And so I think it comes to the whole point about the integrity of our democracy that needs a lot of refinement. And until we do that, you and I will continue to get calls about from family and friends why we are so hustling and refusing to join the politics so that some they can also benefit. And we get those calls every day.
That's right.
Why are you not joining? You know, you can join MPP, you can join NDC. You only have about 8 years to wait, you know, and then your time will come and we will
also benefit.
What
should be the state's attitude to this report?
I think that the most important thing and I've said it elsewhere, is the state or the government to move away from the constant denial of things that are factual. In terms of press freedom, for example, things happen, you report them, and they try to downplay them as if it doesn't matter or it didn't happen, unless it's something that is so obvious that they cannot run away from. And I think we need to take these things serious. If I were in government, well, it's a, first of all, to acknowledge and to say that, well, it's a democracy that we are building. We are young at it, and there will be imperfections here and there. What is important is for us to learn from these developments and put in place the necessary structures to deal with these infractions and other things that would continue to give us...
CTFM's Caleb Kuda's situation. They seem to mock us, so to speak, that, you know, this smallish boy, so to speak, you know, is arrested, and then he's sticking through such an ordeal, and then you have, you know, the security storming, national security storming the premises of CTFM, and we discover, the national security itself discovers who superintended the wrong act. And what it does is just say, leave national security. And they talk about the fact that the person, how many days later, is made to head, you know, a certain unit of the Ghana Armed Forces. That is to say, this is allowing impunity. You talk about the threat for Erastus Asare Donkor to be beating up. Their focus is that this has gone unsanctioned. The MP, who is also actually has a leadership role in parliament, is free and nothing is going on. And if you look at it from that perspective, what can be done to avoid, because I'm not happy that my country is being painted this way on the globe. I don't travel much, but I feel so welcome and accepted and respected as a Ghanaian.
Yeah. No, I think that the government should begin to take some of these developments very seriously. Apart from the Caleb Kuda incident, we have filed a petition to the Minister for Defense, and this has been over a month now. We are yet to hear anything from the Ministry of Defense. And this is another young guy. You know, we recently ran the next generation investigative journalist fellowship. And one of the young people, Michael Edu, traveled to Kumasi, and we assigned them to go over the country and then, you know, take up matters that are of interest to them. And he decided, well, I want to look at these abandoned hospitals and so on. So he went to the Afari Military Hospital, which is one of those that has been abandoned, if I may put it that way, and decided to take some shots of what he was seeing. Mm. And he was accosted by some military officials who were there. Of course, I mean, if what he did was an infraction, he could be arrested and taken through due process. But this guy was taken to the camp, asked whether he wanted to slap himself or be slapped. And the guy is confused. Eventually, he's taken to a place, asked to do press-ups, and he's instructed, you're supposed to do 30 press-ups at a go. If you stop, you start all over again. Mm. And then in the course of that, they put cement blocks at his back to do the press-up. Sometimes the inhumane treatment that, you know, is subjected to some of our own people, you can't just understand. And then a petition is filed and there is no response. It's as if to say, look, it's okay. What happened to the person is fine. Asankregua, a journalist goes to a scene, you know, military have stormed the place, I mean, the national security has stormed the place, operations ongoing, a journalist gets there to ask what is happening. And then this journalist is brutalized to almost death. Oh. He's still going through medical treatment. Our own colleague, Latif Idris, police CID headquarters, not a party headquarters, CID headquarters. This guy is brutalized, you know, severely. Until date, we are told we can't find the people who did that, and so on and so forth. National security storms, modern Ghana officers, you know, pick up the journalists, take their equipment. I know you are handling that case. The last time we had a conversation...
You mentioned Latif's case, so I'm handling that, so yes, I won't comment.
You know, the last time we met with the National Security Minister over the Kennedy-Japan threat against Erastus Asare Donkor, the modern Ghana issue came up. The minister said, oh, I'm surprised that we still have equipment of the journalists with us. for some time now. Okay, we're going to release it. We haven't heard the development about it. And the Honorable Kennedy Japon, I mean, we all know the history behind the murder of Swale. I'm not saying that he orchestrated, I mean, he did it, but of course, what he did, the antecedents to that murder, you know, is something that in a serious country, he would have been indicted and properly investigated. And that is why, for example, on the Swale incident and a few others, we are currently in the process of filing a process at the ECOWAS court against the state, okay, because the state has a responsibility to ensure that the right things are done.
All right, so because you are mentioning cases that I'm involved in, I don't know what to do. That's such an invidious position you put me in. But I think that it will be unfair on my part not to say at least this, that in respect of the modern Ghana situation with the national security, there's a certain resolution of it. You'll get to know soon, and it will be satisfactory. Latif Idris is still going on. I think the trial is just about to commence. And for Erastus Sasaridonko, the multimedia petitioned a number of places, including the diplomatic, you know, arrangements. The police was petitioned. As we sit, since then, we are unaware of they inviting the culprits to ask them any questions at all. They haven't told. If they have done so, they haven't gotten back to us on that. We have submitted all the documents, the evidence that we have to them. Unfortunate. Okay, let me take your closing comments. We have very limited time. So let me start with Mary. Mary, what will you say in some 30 seconds, 1 minute? Okay, shall we go to Mercy? Yes, Mary. Hello, Mary.
Okay, so hello, Samson.
I can hear you.
For me, I believe that this is our reality. We should accept. Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, go on.
I'm saying that this is our reality. We should begin to accept it as it is, and then hold the bull by the horn and begin the process of ensuring that we change the situation, because Ghana is not deserving of the picture that is painted, a picture that will be shared out there, a picture that we have internalized, and for that matter, now that we are being confronted with, it's something else.
Okay.
I believe that leadership and the various institutions should, as a matter of agency, respond. If they are not responding publicly, they should be looking at some of the changes they can make.
Thank you so very much, Mary Awalana Ada, with the GII. Let's go to Mercy. I'm starting with the lady, so that if time runs out, we leave the men. Before that, Mercy, Charles Rekubrobe, Dr. Charles Rekubrobe says that as others see us, that is the best indicator of our global standing and attractiveness as a destination of choice for investment and leisure. And then Kofi Boateng says, we love euphemisms, our bane. It is it fear? He doesn't know what it is. Yes, Mercy.
Yeah, thank you, Samson. With my closing remarks, I would say that we as a country have to take human rights issues seriously, because human rights cut across all our doings and our endeavors. We have everything, right to participation, right to freedom of speech, property. Wherever we go, we have human rights there. So as a country, we should take our human rights seriously. And also, the institutions that we put in place should be strong. As one former president of the United States said, that we need strong institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Our institutions should be strong. Mm-hmm. If the institutions are there and they are strong, then they are working properly, I think we'll go a long way.
All right. Thank you very much. But unfortunately, this is where time will allow us to stop. Let me say thank you to Suleiman Ibrahima, Executive Director, Media Foundation for West Africa, Mercy Labi, Deputy Commissioner of CHRAJ, Mary Awolena Ada, Programs Manager, Ghana Integrity Initiative, Dr. John Osai Kwapong is Political Scientist, Democracy and Development Fellow, CDD Ghana, and Professor Kwesi Enning, Director, Faculty of Academic Affairs and Research, Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center. And I'm Samson Ladi Ayenini, and as always, my outfit is by Habil's Scooter. Habil's Scooter. You can call them 0200 84 1988. 0200 84 1988. Have a good afternoon.
Joy 99.7 FM. Joy 99.7 FM.